does a beautiful young woman just seemingly vanish into thin air or into deep blue waters? That is the question when it comes to a beautiful former flight attendant, Sarm Heslop.
A rescue operation is underway for a British former flight attendant who vanished down in the Virgin Islands. Sarm Heslop was sailing with her American boyfriend when she disappeared from his yacht, leaving behind all of her belongings. The boyfriend telling authorities that she might have fallen overboard, but law enforcement and volunteers have found no trace of the missing woman in their search of those waters and the coastline.
You're hearing our friend Ansley Earhart at Fox and Friends, and she's right. No trace of the missing woman in the waters. I've dived those waters myself, those exact waters. The water is crystal clear, light blue, beautiful. I understand that the vessel, the Siren Song, was moored either just in the beyond the shallows or actually at a pier. So where did she go in the middle of the night with me, an all-star panel? But first, again, thank you for being with us here at Fox Nation and SiriusXM 111 with me, Sarm's longtime friend, Andrew Baldwin. Jeff Jones, USAR Disaster Area Response Team volunteer who is searching for her right now. Wendy Patrick, California prosecutor, author of Red Flags on Amazon, host of Today with Dr. Wendy, KCBQ. You can find her at WendyPatrickPhD.com, renowned psychiatrist joining us out of the Atlanta jurisdiction, Dr. Angela Arnold. You can find her at AngelaArnoldMD.com. Chris Byers, former police chief, Johns Creek, Georgia, 25 years on the force now, PI and polygrapher at Chris Byers Investigations and Polygraph.com. But first, to CrimeOnline.com, investigative reporter Ellen Killoran. Ellen, thank you for being with us. First of all, could you tell me where was the Siren Song moored? Was it on a pier? Was it on a boardwalk? Was it out in the water? What do we know?
The Siren Song was moored in Frank Bay on St. John's Island. I've seen photos of where it was, and the immediate area is actually kind of remote. There was only one other vessel in the water early that morning that she disappeared, and it was in a very, very dark area.
You know, straight out to Jeff Jones joining us, USAR Disaster Area Response Team volunteer looking for her right now. You know, I was told from a source, Jeff Jones, that the evening before, another vessel was about 100 feet away, full of people.
Yes, there were. I was initially on the scene the next morning, beginning to do scuba diving, as well as shoreline-based search with small craft throughout Frank Bay. That next morning, there were two vessels in that bay, but I spoke to one captain myself who was there the night that she went allegedly missing at around 2 a.m. When Mr. Bain noticed her gone. And that vessel was about 100 to 120 feet to the northwest in that same mooring area in Frank Bay. And that captain said he heard nothing, saw nothing, and was unaware of any kind of anything unusual at all.
So what are you telling me, Jeff Jones?
I'm telling you that I spoke to a captain who was there the night she went missing. He actually came into that bay Sunday morning, and it dropped anchor about 100 to 120 feet away from the Siren Song. And he was there overnight on that vessel. He's also a term charter captain with another catamaran for hire. And he saw nothing, heard nothing, and was unaware of any unusual foul play till the next day when the Coast Guard showed up.
Jeff Jones, where is this? I'm taking that it is not at a boardwalk. It's not at a pier. The Siren Song is moored out in the water. How far from shore would you say?
I would say between 140 to 160 feet, and it's just around the corner from Cruz Bay, in which Cruz Bay is our local town. The population of Cruz Bay is about 2,000 from Cruz Bay, which is the city center, so to speak, for our island here on St. John. It's where all the bars, restaurants, shopping, the water sports, the dive shops, everything's located at. It's maybe a 3-minute walk from there, just around the corner in another bay called Frank Bay.
Mm-hmm.
It's it is a somewhat dark area. I mean, there's not a lot of, there's a few houses there. There's a small boutique hotel, probably 300 feet from where the Siren Song was moored and still is currently moored. I've been there daily doing, you know, searches via with drone and using orthomosaics to create maps above the water. And then also we've done GMRS and GIS grid pattern searches throughout the water in that area. And no one else has heard anything or saw anything that night that I've spoken to.
Now, Ellen Killoran, CrimeOnline.com, investigative reporter, I understand that a dog walker heard someone scream around 1 a.m. The night the storm goes missing. Is that correct?
That is not confirmed, but that is information that has been passed around, that there was someone walking their dog around 1 a.m. They heard sounds that could have been screams. However, the people that I spoke to that were on the vessel that was about 100 feet away that night said that they didn't hear anything unusual.
To Andrew Baldwin joining us, this is Soram Heslop's longtime friend. Andrew, is it pronounced Soram or Sarm?
It's pronounced Psalm.
Thank you. Okay. Tell me, Andrew, what you have learned. I'm going to go back into who Soram is, how you have been friends for so many years, and all about her personality, because that's important to me, Andrew, and I'll tell you why. From what I'm learning about her through my own research, she doesn't seem like the person that would take off at 2 a.m., leaving behind her passport, her cell phone, her wallet, her ID, whatever clothes were on aboard the Siren Song. So her personality is very important to me. But let me ask you this, Andrew, what, if anything, have you learned about a dog walker hearing a scream at 1 a.m.?
So we've heard, Nancy, we've heard the same reports. My understanding is the information of those reports have been passed to the local police, and since then we haven't heard any further any confirmation either way about the dog walker.
Well, I understand Chris Byers, former police chief. I understand what Ellen Killoran is saying. A scream could have been a shriek of laughter. It could have been someone slipping on their vessel. We're hearing from Jeff Jones there was another vessel. Jeff, so there's just that one there about 125 feet away from the Siren Song, or were there others?
I know of one definitely that for positive was sure there the night, because I spoke to that captain on that vessel. I will say that next morning that she was reported missing and we began our search efforts. There was another vessel. There were two more vessels that next morning, but I can only personally confirm of the one vessel I know of that had one captain on it, and he heard nothing. And like he stated, you know, we are a pretty popular tourist destination. There's, you know, there's a boutique hotel, like I said, very close to where that boat was moored up. There's villas there. People play loud music. People party. So that makes it, you know, pretty tough to be descriptive of where it may or may not have came from.
Yeah, I agree.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Guys, we're talking about the disappearance of a beautiful young flight attendant, Soram Heslop, in the U.S. Virgin Islands. How did her body just disappear if she fell overboard? I've dived there. It's impossible that within just a few hours, you can't find her in those waters. Take a listen to our very good friend, Dana Perino at Fox News. Listen.
Investigators in the U.S. Virgin Islands searching for a British woman missing for over a week now. Soram Heslop was last seen on her boyfriend's yacht off the coast of St. John's. Police say he called to report her disappearance the next day around noon, saying when he woke up at 2 a.m., she was not there. The island's police department tweeting this. On March 10th, divers from various local and federal law enforcement agencies and other citizens formed a dive search party to try to locate 41-year-old Soram Heslop, who was reported missing on March 8th. Unfortunately, this effort proved unsuccessful.
Back to Chris Byers, former police chief, joining us now at Chris Byers Investigations and Polygraph.com. Chris, as I was asking you earlier, I really do not doubt that a dog walker heard a scream when he was walking his dog at 1 a.m. Who it was or what it was, we don't know. Could it have been somebody with too much to drink that night, screaming something out, or somebody fell, or somebody's laughing loudly, or it could have been Sarum screaming. We don't know. But Chris, very often we start a timeline at all sorts of unusual places. I like to reference back to the O.J. Simpson double murder case, where a neighbor heard the dog Akita emit a long, plaintive howl, which they had never heard the dog do before. And many people start that timeline with that. Yes, it's just a dog, but it was significant. This could very well be the beginning of the timeline. Chris Byers has got to be investigated.
Yeah, absolutely. In a case like this, you have to run down every possible lead, like you said, to set this timeline. And it was significant enough for this dog walker to report it. So investigators definitely need to run down that lead as much as they, you know, you take a lead and you see where it goes and you run it till the end till it means nothing. But until you do that, it means something and it needs to be followed up with.
And again, to say it hasn't been confirmed, it is true. But that doesn't mean it's true. It's untrue. Just because Chris Byers, that a journalist has not found the dog walker and questioned them, that doesn't mean it didn't happen. Agree or disagree?
Absolutely. That's what I'm saying. The investigators need to run down that lead until it proves to be something or proves not to be something.
You know, another issue. Let me go out to Wendy Patrick, California prosecutor. Hold on, Wendy. I gotta confirm something. To Ellen Killoran, Crime Online, the numbers, the timing is starting to become amorphous. First, we were told that the boyfriend, Bane, first realized she was missing at 2 a.m. and then called local police at 2:30. Now it's slid that he woke up at 2:30. Which one is it, Ellen?
Well, Nancy, we do not have confirmation of the exact time that he called police on the Virgin Islands. That information is only coming from his lawyer. They have not provided any records to support the initial 911 call that he made. So we don't have confirmation if it was 2
Let me ask Jeff Jones. Jeff, what have you been told?
Yes. I have been told only through a statement put out by his lawyer that he initially called VIPD at approximately 2:30 a.m. And via what I understand from his attorney is the fact that at 2:30 a.m. when he called 911, they told him to call Coast Guard, which seems a little odd to me because from my understanding with VIPD and the correspondence I've had with him and the coordination efforts I've had with him during our search, they've been extremely helpful and involved and to the best of their abilities. Now, I find it odd they would just simply say, call the Coast Guard. And then at 11:46 a.m., 9 hours later, almost 10 hours later, he decided to call the Coast Guard. It seems very unusual to me. And I think at that point, he had already retained an attorney, if I understand that correctly as well. I may be incorrect on that, but I know he had retained an attorney in that very short time frame from when Coast Guard was initially alerted to her disappearance.
Let's go through the timeline to Andrew Baldwin. This is Sarum's longtime friend. Andrew, what is your understanding of the course of events that occurred that night, starting with the two of them, Ryan Bane and Sarum, your friend, going on the island for dinner and returning to the vessel, the Siren Song, at around 10 p.m. due to COVID restrictions? What do you understand happened?
So these are the facts as we have them. We know that they went for dinner in Frank's Bay, in Cruise Bay that evening. And then the next fact is that there was a phone call made to the local police, again, believe 2:30 a.m., and then where the advice was given to call the Coast Guard, and that call happened at 11:46 a.m. according to the Coast Guard. Those are the only facts that I have. The rest is information that has not been factually proven.
Well, you know, nothing is factually proven until you go to court. And it's my understanding that this case is not even being treated as a criminal case as of right now. What do we know, Ellen?
That's right. The authorities in the Virgin Islands have not named Ryan Bane a suspect. they have released very little information about the nature and the urgency of the search, now going on over 2 weeks. They did say in a statement released a few days ago that he retained a lawyer very quickly and has not allowed a search of the vessel. Whether or not they are obtaining a search warrant is unknown at this time.
Nancy, may I add to that?
Hold on just a sec. Who's that? Is that Jeff or Andrew?
This is Jeff. On Friday afternoon, while conducting some missions, search missions via drone to develop some mapping and imaging, spoke with two investigators who had been flown up here from St. Croix for the VIPD and spoke with them. And I asked the St. Croix investigator why, if it was possible to do an exigent circumstance search. And he said, yes, it should have been done. Now, I don't know if there's enough facts to support that, but coming from a VIPD investigator that I personally spoke to, he said that that circumstances would have qualified for an exigent search and no warrant would have been needed at the time.
You know what, Jeff Jones, you should have been a lawyer because you're absolutely right. Wendy Patrick, when Jeff Jones, who's searching for SARM right now, says a police officer told him they should do an exigent circumstances search, they're both right. Exigent circumstances is a phrase that came from a very old U.S. Supreme Court case, U.S. versus Carroll. It's so old, it goes back to moonshining days and prohibition, where a vehicle, a four-door vehicle, was getting away and the tail was dragging and the cop knew it was full of moonshine. So without a warrant, pulled the car over, because if he had let the car go, the moonshiner would have gotten rid of all the evidence, which means exigent, urgent circumstances, that the perp could get rid of the evidence. And that's exactly what's being argued right now, Wendy Patrick. They don't need a search warrant where there could be potential evidence on board the vessel and the vessel could take off.
Yeah, what they're looking at is potential destruction of evidence, potential destruction of clues of evidentiary value, all of the above, Nancy. But, you know, there's also potentially public safety exceptions sometimes also that are cited in terms of when do we need the kind of paperwork we might otherwise be able to get if there weren't any issues. Because here we're talking about a disappearance. Nobody disappears. I mean, something happened to this beautiful woman. And part of the issue about, yes, it's a tourist place and there are other people there, we're not talking Florida during spring break. There aren't so many people that she could possibly just have gone missing. It reminds me of that scene in Sleeping with the Enemy where Julia Roberts supposedly falls over the side of the boat and then it turns out she did know how to swim. There's no evidence that this is anything like that, which is why it is even more important that we treat this as the exigency that it is. She just disappeared in crystal blue waters with another boat 100 feet away. That is why this is of such significance, and they're trying to get the evidence they need quicker.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Andrew Baldwin, a longtime friend of SARM Hyslop's. Andrew, she could swim, correct?
Oh, yeah,
she's a scuba diver.
Could swim up. She's sailed across the Atlantic. She's used to being around boats, around water. I wouldn't call her an expert yachtswoman, but certainly she could handle herself on a boat across the Atlantic. This isn't a boat across the Atlantic. This is a boat anchored in shallow water, which makes us even more concerned, you know, about what happened.
Did I hear somebody say she's scuba'd?
Yes. And I will say this, too, just from my experience with search and rescue and swift water search and rescue as well. When a human being hits the water that's coherent in any way, shape, or form, as soon as they hit that water, it's a very sobering experience. And the natural survival instinct says grab a hold of something, get onto something, on a rock, a ladder, whatever it takes to get out of that water.
Jeff Jones, so not only did she scuba, she swam, she crossed the ocean, according to Andrew Baldwin. How deep is the water where the siren song is moored, Jeff?
You know what, where it's at exactly is probably between 15 to 20 feet deep, but within 50 feet, it gets into 5 foot of water. It's a very, very clear bay, that's primarily sandy bottom with some rocks and reef involved. But for the most part, it's a pretty shallow bay. Most of all of our waters down in the Caribbean are shallow.
And could you tell me the state of the water the following morning when you go out and start searching? Is it just as clear as I remember it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, when we initially began doing our grid search patterns, we were doing small craft trying to cover the most amount of area quickly. And we were, most of that was done, you know, visually above the water because the water is so clear. At the next day, when we were doing dives in 40 to 50 foot of water, we could see, you know, visibility 40, 50 foot deep easily.
Easily. I remember doing a wreck dive not far from there. And it was, you could see, I know I had to be able to see 50, 60 feet from where I was when I was diving that far away. And I just don't understand how this whole thing happened. And typically, it's my belief, Wendy Patrick, former prosecutor, when you have to struggle, look, when you're putting together a Rubik's Cube and it doesn't work, you move it around because you're doing something wrong. This equation is not working, Wendy.
Right, and that's why they have to keep going back to the beginning, exactly as you say. You know, the timeline is the way this case will unravel. This is the way they're going to either prove something or not prove something. Very preliminarily, it's not been classified as foul play, so they have to go back and start again at the beginning. And if they even start with new evidence that's coming in, like the fact that there was another boat so close, unless they were dead asleep, the heaviest sleepers in the world, they would have heard the scream that's been reported by the dog walker. Maybe some other piece of evidence comes forward, and then that gets either corroborated or contradicted by what we already know. But you are correct that we just keep turning that Rubik's Cube a little bit differently and then starting again.
Back to Ellen Kaloran, CrimeOnline.com investigative reporter who has managed to track down the boyfriend, Ryan Bain's ex-wife. Ellen, what did you learn?
Ryan Bain has a domestic violence arrest from 2011 from his former wife, who has said that he was physically and verbally abusive during their marriage.
Isn't it true, Ellen, that she says that on their honeymoon, she became so concerned for her safety, she cut the trip short and left?
That's right. What she told me was that on the first days of their honeymoon, they got into an argument in an elevator, and he pushed her in an elevator on their honeymoon. And then she ended up cutting it short because she didn't feel safe.
On an elevator. That means it was public. Somewhere, either a hotel or a resort. They were on an elevator, and according to her, he pushed her on the elevator. And that was
That's what she said.
On a couple of days after they got married. So what happened that resulted in a police report and an arrest?
That was 3 years later. This is in November 2011. The couple had gone to a wedding that night. They drove home early in the morning, and she was driving, his wife, Corey. She says that Ryan was sleeping in the car or trying to sleep. She needed some directions from him. She needed help navigating, and she was trying to get him to help, and he got very, very, very upset. According to the police report, she told police he dragged her out of the car when they got home. Once they were inside the house, she said that he pushed her to the floor, hit her head on the floor to the point where she broke her tooth. She had a chipped tooth when police arrived. She was bloodied and scratched. Her t-shirt had been stretched around at the neck, and he was taken into custody.
Back to Jeff Jones, USAR Disaster Area Response Team volunteer looking for SARM as we speak. Jeff, tell me about the search. What, if anything, have you learned?
Unfortunately, everything has so far become unsuccessful and unfruitful. We began the search initially the day we became aware that she went missing, that Monday afternoon. We initially the first 6 days spent a lot of time in small craft searching shoreline, scuba diving, snorkeling, and that's more transitioned to a ground search this time. We're now using obviously other volunteers on foot searching what's capable to be searched as far as the terrain is not necessarily the most kind. In heavy, heavy bush, as well as along rough reef, rocks, coral. So we've been using drones. Thankfully, a local professional drone pilot, Andrew Peter, has volunteered his time and been flying missions for us. And he volunteers with a group called Global Dirt, or at help.ngo, a disaster response team. And they've taken those maps that we've created from the drone imagery and entered into the software. It stitches all those together and makes a very high resolution map. And then that was shared with amongst his colleagues and associates for analyzing, and then also provided to VIPD for further analysis. So far, we found nothing. We found no evidence of anything. Not a clothing, not shoes, not an unusual broken twig. I mean, we've been pretty extensive so far and continue to be, because we want to exhaust all efforts to make sure that if she is here, that we find her.
Jeff Jones, let me ask you a question. Is it confirmed, other than by the boyfriend, Ryan Bain, that they went on land for dinner the night before? Has that been confirmed?
Yes.
By who?
There are some of her friends that were at a local establishment. I believe they've confirmed it to Andrew Baldwin as well, that they were on land. So the way it works is Frank Bay is probably a 3 to 5 minute dinghy ride from the dinghy dock in Cruise Bay. So they would have gotten off the boat, taken the dinghy, the small tender, came around the corner into Cruise Bay, tied up to the dinghy dock, and walked into town.
You mean they used their own? He had a dinghy?
Yep.
So he used their own dinghy?
Yep.
And can you tell me the name of the restaurant?
You know what? I believe they were at 420 to Center, is my understanding.
420 what?
420 to Center. It's named after a bunch of Boston folks who, Fenway Park, I think it's 420 to Center is the distance to Center Field.
420 to Center?
I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that is the last establishment they were seen at together.
So, Jeff Jones, there would have been witnesses that saw her there. Was there anybody, Jeff Jones, that saw her back on board the Siren Song that night after dinner?
Only Mr. Bain, as far as I know, and that would have been based on his reports to the police and his call to the Coast Guard.
Interesting. Jeff Jones, what, if anything, can you do now?
Keep searching, not give up. Keep exposing this story and getting all the attention we can, in hopes that someone comes forward that saw something, that heard something, that knows something. Create awareness that this is going on, that we need to stop this. This has to find some kind of resolution as soon as possible.
Jeff Jones, have you seen Ryan Bain? Have you laid eyes on him?
I have not.
I'm very curious about his demeanor.
Yep, I have. I've never met him. I don't know him. Uniquely, one of his lawyers' initial statements they put out was that he was assisting search efforts, but I've been involved every day and I've yet to see him in any way, shape, or form.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Guys, we are talking about the disappearance of a beautiful young former flight attendant last seen having dinner there at the U.S. Virgin Islands. We believe she went back to a vessel with her boyfriend. With me, Jeff Jones, Disaster Area Response Team, searching for her, to Andrew Baldwin, her longtime friend. Andrew, what, if anything, have you and your team, who's also helping to look for her, found out about the night she went on land and had dinner?
Well, Nancy, we know, as Jeff says, and whilst I'm talking about Jeff, I want to say thank you to Jeff and all the local responders. The man, Jeff Jones, is someone that's come into our lives and provided us a lot of information, a lot of support, and we owe that man a lot. So whilst we're here, I want to say thank you to Jeff. What we obviously know that they were seen having dinner. And then, as Jeff previously said, the next confirmed time is 2:30 a.m. Between the time they were seen dinner and 2:30 a.m., we're not clear on what happened, apart from the reports in the media from Mr. Bain.
Jeff, just a question. From that restaurant, 420 to Center, to where Ryan Bain had his dinghy parked, did anybody see her get in that dinghy?
I cannot confirm that. And again, I'm not 100% sure that was the restaurant they were at. I was told that was one of the last places they were seen. And Andrew may have confirmed that with his mutual friends. Again, I don't know the either party involved. Just simply offering the volunteer search efforts. Being said, I cannot confirm that anyone saw them, you know, depart the Cruise Bay dinghy dock headed towards their vessel with siren song.
Gotcha. Andrew Baldwin, is that the restaurant?
From what I understand, yeah, absolutely. That's the name of the restaurant.
And to Dr. Angela Arnold, psychiatrist, joining us out of the Atlanta jurisdiction, you know the reason I'm asking. I want to find out, was she drinking? Was the boyfriend drinking? Were they angry with each other? Had there been an argument? And I'm only going to find that out if you go to the restaurant and speak to the people there that were there that night, if that's the correct restaurant. Because that matters, Dr. Angie.
It does. It does, Nancy. It is well known that heavy alcohol consumption increases the risk of violence. And I'll tell you something, Nancy, I am, in listening to all of this, I'm actually very curious about how these two met. We keep calling them boyfriend and girlfriend, but how long have they been together? How did they meet? I'm very interested in knowing some of this.
Well, I think I've got just the guy for you, Andrew Baldwin. This is Storm's longtime friend. I understand that they met on Tinder.
Yeah, they met, obviously, Storm left the UK in kind of late 2019 and sailed across the Atlantic with some friends and arrived in the Caribbean kind of in early 2020. And then because of the pandemic, obviously kind of got stuck on their journey. They were originally going to try and sail as far as they could around the world. And it was around about the end of July when they first met.
And from what I've done in my own investigation, it seems to me, Andrew Baldwin, that the boyfriend, Ryan Bain, 44 years old, has the siren song. It's a luxury yacht, cost about $700,000. And he takes parties, groups of people out and about in the waters to sightsee, maybe dive, maybe snorkel. And he always has a mate, basically a woman that does the cooking is what that is. And is that what Sorm was doing?
What she was, yeah, I mean, she joined, joined in him at the end of, or the middle of February, and was working kind of and living on board the boat. So yeah, I'm not entirely sure what she was actually doing every day, but yeah, that's similar to what I understand.
So it's my understanding also, Andrew Baldwin, Storm's longtime friend, that you guys have been in touch with the governor of the Virgin Islands, Albert Bryan. What for and what did you learn?
So we have been in touch with the authorities, and the family have been in touch with the authorities in the Virgin Islands, and, you know, they thank them for their support. And importantly, Nancy, keep asking for their support. Number one, to find Sam. That's our primary objective. And number two, you know, as you said, we need to understand what happened. We need to understand this timeline that makes absolutely no sense to you and to us as her friends and her family, of this missing time, particularly between the call at 2:30 to the police and the Coast Guard at 11:46 in the morning. The timeline confuses us, and we want some clarity around that.
Yeah, like a 10-hour delay. At first, it was stated that he noticed Sorm was missing when his alarm sounded. He was coming unleashed from his mooring around 2 a.m. Then it somehow has slid to 2:30 a.m. and that he called the local police. They told him to call a Coast Guard. And he waited until noon, almost noon, to call the Coast Guard. Take a listen to our Cut 10 at KATC.
Sarm moved to the VI in January to go sailing and essentially live with her boyfriend. Because she's so well-traveled, Taylor was shocked to hear of her disappearance.
Obviously, my initial was, what do you mean? What do you mean she's missing? She can't be missing.
She says Heslop is around 5'7".
Slim. She's very athletic, loves hiking, walking. So she's quite fit. Tattoo on her shoulder, flowers and a seahorse. And she's got a small star just under her eye as well.
Out to Jeff Jones joining us, conducting a search right now for Sorm. How would the siren song have become unmoored?
That would be a good question. And that's one of the reasons I think it's paramount that we would be able to get a forensics team on that vessel. You know, the thing is, the way those the anchor alarm, which supposedly alerted him, you know, that the at 2 a.m. is what woke him up. And when he noticed SARM was gone, but that alarm operates off GPS satellites. I know flying the drone in that area directly above the vessel, we picked up 18 satellites that we were connected to for GIS searches in our grid pattern search. So there's many, many satellites that would have pinged off of, which leaves a footprint. A team of experts in forensics can go inside that nav system, as well as that anchor alarm system, pull up any kind of alerts that were saved either to the SD card or onto the hardware itself.
Wow, you just read my mind, because I've been wondering, I know a little bit about vessels, but obviously not as much as you, if when an alarm like that goes off, if it leaves a digital footprint, and you just answered me that yes, it would. I'd like to know what time that alarm went off, if it went off, that said about this chain of events. But we're not going to learn anything without a search warrant. Andrew Baldwin, SARM's longtime friend, are you surprised that vessel has not been searched, much less the digital footprint?
Yeah, I mean, that's the last place she was seen. That's the last place. And, you know, and I know it's different. We're in the UK and you're in the US. But, you know, you start at the place number one. Place number one and the place she was reported to disappear from is the boat. So we're just asking to that's where it looked, and a fingertip search by the police. And we just really struggle to understand why that's not being permitted, why that's not being allowed to happen, because that is the place she is reported to have gone missing from. So clearly that's where you start.
I'm struggling with it too. To Wendy Patrick, it is the U.S. Virgin Islands. I assume search warrants work the same way there as they do here, right along with exigent circumstances that Jeff Jones brought up.
Yeah, no, that's true, Nancy. And as we talk more about this, I almost wonder what's going on behind the scenes in terms of maybe there's an issue of compromising an ongoing investigation, especially because he has a lawyer now. Are there other factors that we don't know about? Andrew Baldwin has provided us with such amazing information. Everyone needs a friend like Andrew Baldwin. And I would also say volunteers like Jeff Jones in their community. But between the two of them, even, they've supplied a lot of the evidence that we're hoping that law enforcement also has and is working with in determining, do we need to wait for a warrant or can we just go in? Now time has passed. Why? And I would even extend that to the interviewing of the other patrons at the restaurant to see, as Angie says, did they see, hear, or remember anything that would shed some light on whether there was drinking? Did it end up being a drowning? In which case, we're back to why didn't they find her? But yes, it is curious, and I'm hopeful we'll get more information that'll help us recognize why we don't have a search warrant yet.
It's my understanding they have the same justice system that we do, hence the U.S. Virgin Islands, USVI. Ellen Killoran, what can you tell me about the resolution or adjudication of this guy's previous attack on his wife, and they're now divorced?
He pleaded guilty and went to jail for 21 days.
So this isn't just an arrest. This is a conviction. He pled guilty and did jail time?
Mm-hmm. 21 days.
Okay. You know, Dr. Angela Arnold, with all the cases I prosecuted and all the nights I worked at the Battered Women's Center in Atlanta, I learned a lot. Based on what Ellen Killoran is being told by his previous wife, Corey Stevenson, there were many attacks, a lot of verbal abuse, a lot of physical abuse, but she called the cops this one time.
Exactly.
What do you make of that, Angela?
Well, it leads up to that. It builds up. And I'll tell you something else I make of this. Nancy, a tiger doesn't change his stripes. And what worries me so much for this young woman is that she met him on a dating app. Then they were secluded because of COVID. So nobody, I'm not hearing any words about how their relationship had progressed over the last year. We don't know anything about their relationship. Then she's all by herself on a boat with this man for God only knows how long. Nobody knows what was going on with this girl.
Andrew Baldwin, I know you can hear Dr. Angela Arnold. What, if anything, had she said about her relationship with Bain?
All the conversations that she'd had with friends was that she was happy. She'd obviously flown back from Malta back to to go back to the boat and to be with him. So, and the last kind of conversations I had with her, which were by message, kind of just as she arrived in the US Virgin Island, was that she was happy and happy to be there. There were no issues or anything that's been raised. And we want to be clear on that. We're not, this is us, you know, being really clear on what's happened to our friend. This is not about us pointing any suspicion. This is about us being clear. We want to know where our friend is and we want to know what's happened to her. That's our number one focus.
Andrew Baldwin, we all do. We wait as justice unfolds. Tip line 800-222-TIPS, T-I-P-S. Nancy Grace, Crime Story, signing off. Goodbye, friend.